Unleashed. Unbranded on CliffCentral.com.
Hi, I'm Farah Fortune, and I'm sending in for Timothy Maurice today. Welcome to Unbranded. And today we're going to be talking about artists' wins and fails in the entertainment industry. And I also have Akio with me today, Akio Kawahito. Did I pronounce that correct?
You did. It's Japanese names. That's the beauty of it, is it's like pronounced exactly the way it's spelled. There's no like, we follow the rules in life and also in spelling and pronunciation.
Oh, see, so we're getting taught things today as well. So he'll be joining me as well. He has spent the last 5 years as an artist manager and just recently, if I'm correct, retired.
It's a wrap on the artist management. It's a lot of work, you know, and a lot of headaches, but it's been a great journey.
And I don't think people actually understand that, but actually a few years before that, I'm going to say it exactly the way he said it to me. It's like babysitting rappers, but I know what he means. Taking care of artists is not easy. So this man has a lot of experience.
I was going to say it sounds worse than it is, but actually it's not. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah. Thank you for joining us today. So, a little bit of background from me. I'm the director of African Star Communications, and we built the business on actually building artists and their brands. So just to give you a little bit of background about branding itself, I mean, branding has been around since 2700 BC, if I'm correct, and it actually started with people. It actually comes from the word burning stick, and it actually started with people branding their cattle to make sure that they knew which one of the stock was theirs. And that's really what branding, and obviously it's evolved. We no longer brand our artists, although sometimes. it's tempting. But really today we're going to speak about, especially in the entertainment industry, what is a brand fail and what is a brand win? So we have quite a number of examples for you. But we're going to start with Akio giving us a few examples of what he thinks are brand wins and brand fails when it comes to artists in the entertainment industry.
Okay. You know, I kind of think just kind of off the top of my head, I'll focus more on the brand wins, the brand fails. A lot of times you don't even really know about them because they fail. So, you know, it never actually becomes a big thing. But I think from a hip hop point of view, and that's my background, I think if you look at kind of like the Casper, AKA, how that kind of beef materialized and the direction that each one went with their brand, I think is really interesting. And if you look at kind of like what AKA did, he reminds me of back in the day in college basketball in the States, there's a player named Christian Laettner. And he really defined the role of the villain. And I remember I was young enough to be following this guy's career, at that time. And I remember everybody hated him. And now there's t-shirts now that say, I still hate Christian Laettner. And this is like from 15 years ago. So I saw this, 30 by 30 documentary, on ESPN, which I think is a great documentary series. And it really kind of, broke down the way that why people hated him. But then also why he was so famous and why, you know, everybody kind of followed him. And I think that that's kind of like the direction that AKA went. And that is like he really embraced the role of the villain. He branded himself as the villain. While it may seem like a negative thing, you know, there's a lot of people who kind of see themselves as the villain. And at the same time, when you're the villain, it almost draws more attention, you know, to you. And for the sake of everybody wants to see what you want to do. And at the same time, everybody wants to see you fail. But
do you
at
think
the same time, everyone's, I think it did work for him because I think there's a lot of people, you know, like, when you're the villain, I think that, a lot of people kind of revel in that role of the confidence, also maybe in being slightly misunderstood. And then at the same time, there's the people that hate him, but they still follow him on Twitter because they see what he wants to, what he's saying. And, you know, as long as he's delivering quality music, you know, that role works, you know? So then when he went down that path and he's beefing with Casper. So what does Casper have to do? He has to play the good guy, the saint, you know, bless you. You know, that, I think that that's also really interesting because there's no middle ground and he also can't go with the edgy, role. So he branded himself as the very humble guy, the man of the people. And I think the contrast was incredible, but at the same time it worked. And I think both can really work. You know, you can be the good guy and the villain. And I think, AKA, he plays a great villain, you know, and Casper also really, I mean, at the end of the day, the main thing is that you have to actually be yourself because this is a role that, you know, you can't be the good guy all the time as your brand, but now with like camera phones and so many interviews and stuff like that, it's so easy to catch someone breaking from their role that they're trying to play.
So let's go back to yesterday. So let's talk about branding. So yesterday, speaking of Casper, he released a picture. And on the picture, the words, it was for the promoting of his, you know, Philip the Stadium.
Yeah.
And the word stadium was spelled wrong.
So I saw that.
Do you think, you know, yes, it created a lot of PR for him.
Was it intentional?
Well, for me, I mean, I'm no longer his publicist, so I don't know if it was intentional or not, but do you think that was a brand win or a brand fail?
Well, I'd say that it's tough to say. I mean, it accomplished, under normal circumstances, that photo wouldn't have gotten any attention outside of the normal followers that he has. But even, you know, I know it, and a lot of other people know about it as well. So I guess in the end, it's a bit of a, I would say it's a win. Mm-hmm. I mean, his job is to fill up, the stadium, not to win spelling bees. So I think that I'd say it's a win, you know, and that's the other thing about his fans is they're so dedicated as well. I don't think that they actually care, you know, that it was misspelled wrong. And I think, you know, he's a man of the people. The people spell things wrong.
True, but we also have brand fails that have turned into brand wins. I mean, let's take the Kardashians, for example. Mm. We had Kim Kardashian and a sex tape was released. She has a brilliant mom as a manager who completely turned that thing around and got them a reality show. And this, I mean, all the siblings, you know, they benefited off this reality show. The two younger sisters, I mean, Kylie has now got her own lipstick line and Kendall is a model. You know, they really have won the brand war in terms of trying to put themselves into a certain...
Definitely changed the whole direction of that family.
They have. They really changed of everything.
The boyfriends, anybody who's affiliated with them is like, people are trying to date a Kardashian just to get their own show. It's crazy.
So, yeah. I mean, there are examples of that where it's been a brand fail. But, I mean, also at the end of the day, when that happened, Ray J was a bigger brand than Kim Kardashian was. And if you look at how the tables have turned now. But in terms of brand wins like that, do you agree with things like that? Do you agree that that is the right way to go? Or do you feel like people still need to work for their credibility in terms of the brand that they put out there?
You know, it's difficult to say. I think that, you know, I come from the school of old, you know, like, we didn't have reality shows, you know, on my come up, even social media was relative. I mean, when I first started DJing, like in 2002, I mean, there was no...
You're showing your age.
But, you know, that MySpace was still like 5 years away. So it's like, you know, we didn't have any of those things. So, you know, although I'm from the old school, I try not to be... One of the main things that I have for like my longevity is I try not to hate on the new school and the way things are going now. You know, there's a lot of DJs who are just like, oh man, screw all these new cats doing this, this, and this. You know, my thing is that I look at when I was coming up, the people that I looked up to, the ones that kind of embraced me, I'm like, oh, you know, like it really meant a lot. And the ones that kind of didn't, because nobody likes to see, their star waning. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So a lot of people are bitter about it. So, you know, the way I look at it is, you have to take everything, that's modern into context. So I think that, while I do appreciate people that have kind of come up the right way through hard work and stuff like that, you know, that obviously resonates more with me. At the same time, I can appreciate somebody who did something clever, to really kind of jump the queue. I mean, there's a certain thing, like you can get this popularity and notoriety quite quick, but then at the end of the day, there's still a point where you still have to kind of have the talent to back it up. Otherwise, I think that the fame will be short lived.
In terms of that, though, like you said, you know, you can build your popularity quite quickly, and I think we do. You know, we rely heavily on social media for that these days, especially when building new artists, because it's, you know, it's so quick and it's out there. Last week, I gave a talk at Nelson Mandela University, and I actually gave examples of how traditional PR is going into digital PR, and a lot of artists are now taking on the role of trying to build their own brands without advice.
Okay.
So with the artists that are listening today, you know, what advice would you give them in terms of understanding that, you know, digital PR or just social media itself is very immediate and very real time, and you've got to be so careful of what you put out there. And you know, it is hard getting a manager in this industry. It's hard getting someone to believe in you. Mm-hmm. So when you have to do this by yourself, I mean, what would you say to artists out there in terms of building your brand on social media when that's the most effective, cost-effective platform a lot of new artists have these days?
I think it's difficult. I mean, social media is like, either you got it or you don't. Like it's like a personality thing. Let me look at like a Questa, for example.
Okay.
To me, on Twitter, he's not such a dynamic person on mm-hmm. Twitter. Like it's a lot of retweets, a lot of engagements, you know. He's not someone that's really expressing a lot of his personality. You don't really get a lot of his thoughts. It's just used as a way of, you know, reflecting what his fans say or pushing events like that. So I think it's like, you know, it's not for everybody.
No, it's not.
In terms of like PR and stuff like that, I think it's the same thing as any other aspect of being an artist. And that is, I don't believe in like the whole Jay-Z concept where a rapper is, you know, record label head, CEO, you know, like when I see a person's bio and they got like 15 things on their bio, I'm just like, you probably don't do any of the one things right.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's almost impossible.
Yeah. Master of none.
It's almost impossible to like run an effective business and do it all yourself. Like everybody has a team. And I understand like on the come up, you might not necessarily have that. So, you do kind of have to learn. But at the same time, I think it's important to find like surely one of your homeboys has a pretty good personality, understands social media a little bit better and is willing to kind of help out, and push you along. Like I'm a big fan of like, even just from an early stage, putting together a team of like loyal and committed friends. And it's really up to the artist. Like one of the big things is like not only being able to rap or to write music or to DJ or something like that, but also to make it in the industry is to be able to read people and understand like kind of how someone can help you and what roles that they can fill. Even if you don't have any money, like, you know, when we were coming up, we all did it for free. We all did it for the mm-hmm. sake of like building
building the industry.
Yeah, and just like we had a group goal, and then we all had our individual goals, mm-hmm. you know? So, I mean, you see it now, like, managers or people involved, like, the right-hand man of artists are getting fame in themselves, you know? Like, you see, Tilly or Spuda or all these guys, you know, like, have become celebrities themselves, and their talent has been strictly pushing the artist that they hang around.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that's another thing. I mean, as an artist manager, you can build your own brand within that as well. But how far do you go building your own brand before you're stepping on the toes of your artists?
You know, one of the reasons I left management was because, you know, I've got my own personal goals. Mm-hmm. I was an artist first. I never wanted to be in management. And
can you give the listeners, you know, who you were actually managing before you retired?
I guess I was managing Reason, the rapper. I started managing him in 2011. We came up together from when I first moved to Joburg, and Loot Love, and then Cool Out as a brand represents Speedster, Gingerbread Man, Naima McLean, myself as well. But as an individual, I was focused on Loot Love and Reason.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I mean, those are quite big brands. And I mean, Loot has really built her brand as this phenomenal, sexy woman who mm-hmm. is really talented.
Sure.
And that's the thing also in our industry. We've built a lot of brands in this industry that have been built on sexy women.
Sure.
So the talent side coming into it has not always gotten them as far. Why?
Right.
Because their branding hasn't been great, and all they've ever been is the sexy woman. So do you feel that being talented alongside creating your brand is very important? Because we do have, I mean, whether it's in Africa, whether it's internationally, we have a number of people that are famous for being famous.
For sure.
So in terms of the branding, do you feel that the culture of branding has changed? Because now with social media, we're put in a position where you can be a celebrity because you're famous on Twitter.
It's true. Like I see on Instagram, like, you know, when you do the search function and it just like brings up random people and you'll click on it and then you'll see a girl and it'll be like 25,000 followers or something, but you have no idea who they are.
Yeah.
You know, it is true. Like, I mean, with Loot, there's quite a bit of presenters. I mean, we had an advantage because she was on Live Amp, which is mm-hmm. one of the biggest shows in the country. But at the same time, it's like, how do you kind of define her? Because she was following in the footsteps of like Bonang and Mini. So, you know, it's you want to set her apart while at the same time, you know, kind of defining like who she is. So, you know, we kind of thought about it a lot, like how do we want her portrayed? And the thing is like she's not like a girly girl, you know, mm-hmm. she's very much kind of a bit of a tomboy. Her look is very different.
She's such a strong woman.
Yeah. And you know, so she loves sneakers, hip hop, you know? So like my whole, outlook on that was to, so I've got this, it's like, it's the Quentin Tarantino theory mm-hmm. when it comes to girls. And like what I've noticed that he does is what Tarantino will do, to create these really cool female characters. He gets really fly women and gets them to do stuff that men usually do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's like appealing and sexy, because men love seeing a beautiful woman doing something that a man does. That's like when you see like a, like it's such a look, like to dress girls up in like construction outfits or like, you know, something like that, like, you know, tools and like, and, cause men like seeing that. They like seeing a sexy woman doing something that a man does. And Tarantino has been doing that. He's been making these like, and then at the same time, women love seeing like a really strong woman, like kicking ass, like, yeah. you know, so I think that that's also kind of what Rihanna's doing, you know, mm-hmm. this whole Rihanna's almost like a dude. You know what I'm saying? She's out at the strip club spending money. Her attitude and behavior is kind of the same way. She's like that. She's got that Tarantino thing. And that's kind of what I wanted to do with Loot. And that was to maintain the femininity. Is that, I don't know if that's even a word, but at the same time, give her this like sexy, masculine, like I'm a boss, type of look, you know. So that's the way that we wanted to package her, is like this Rihanna Quentin Tarantino like badass chick.
Okay, but now you're talking about that, but in terms of branding, where do you feel that artists fail their brands when they try to reinvent themselves? I mean, we've seen it over the years. I mean, if you look at, for example, Madonna,
okay.
how many times has this woman changed her image? I mean, she went from the 80s and she was all this punk rock, and she went into the 90s yeah, being no this doubt. Sexy kind of the Tarantino effect there too, where she was, you know, she could do anything a man did, and she dressed the part, everything. I mean, she's 60 odd now and she still looks hot as hell, but her brand has continuously changed.
Sure.
But do you think by doing that, it's a good thing? Because not everybody keeps their fan base when they change their image.
I think Madonna is like a rarity in a sense that I remember, like, again, I'm old enough to have listened to Madonna throughout her stages, and I remember my mom used to just always diss Madonna, like, she can't sing and this and that. And the thing is, it's true, like her voice isn't that great, but you know, like the main thing about her has always been how savvy she was within the industry. And you can tell, like, every musical movement that came along, at the very beginning, Madonna was there working with whoever was at the front, you know, the front line of that, you know? So I think that she has a unique ability, especially coming up, to be able to like merge in with what's cool. And I think that that's very rare, but I think so. I mean, I think it's great for her, man. It's allowed her, this extreme longevity where she's had hits across decades. I think that it's good. I mean, if you look at it, all right, from a local perspective, we're going to talk about brand changing. To me, within the South African, especially within music, what I've always told people is, you can't leave, because having a comeback is so hard.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll see, like right now, Coolie is struggling with it, you know, because I mean, due to reasons that wasn't necessarily his fault. He was very absent for about a year,
and
year
and
a half.
He's still one of our greatest rappers,
he
and he's struggling.
He doesn't pull the same numbers. Like, he doesn't have the same fan base. So my advice is always, don't have a comeback. Never leave.
But do you
know?
Think that's because Coolie is not your average rapper in terms of branding? Because if you think, let's pick, you know, we've spoken about AKA and Casper. Let's pick them. You look at their brands in terms of how out there they are, their social media, their, you know, their interviews, their personal lives that we know about.
Yeah.
Coolie's very protective of his personal
life.
We don't know that much about him, you know? The things that I know is because of speaking to him or hanging around with him, but it's not things that I pick up and I'll read in a paper, which I sit there as a publicist and think, oh my gosh, I wish people knew this about you and you'd probably get more PR.
For sure.
I think he's an amazing rapper. I think we have some really, really like talented rappers in South Africa. My biggest problem is that I feel that we are in an age where people don't care about talent anymore.
Okay.
People care about what your image and your brand represents. Again, like you were saying, you know, you didn't think Madonna's the greatest singer. I love Rihanna, but I don't think Rihanna can sing.
For sure.
You know, like, she can't. Mm. But she has an amazing brand. And I will go out there and I'll spend money on her music. I mean, I spend money on music anyway.
I loved
you know?
Her last album.
But that's the
so
thing.
Yeah.
She, whether it was a bad album or not, Rihanna would have still been able to sell out her concerts because her brand represents that. You look at Beyonce has got an army of fans across the world. You can't say anything about Beyonce on social media, you know, and like you just won't have a social media account left after that. But at the end of the day, her brand has built to a point where people think she's God, like she's an angel, and that's how people perceive her. So in terms of, I mean, so take those examples. You got two of the biggest female artists in the world, Rihanna and Beyonce.
Okay.
Beyonce has a very angelic brand.
For sure.
And Rihanna has got this I don't care brand.
Right.
But they still do well. So, you know, being in a position where we've managed artists and I know that the local scene is very different, where we can't have a Rihanna because society in South Africa would never accept that.
Sure.
You know, we wouldn't as a culture and all the cultural differences we have. I don't know if Rihanna was local, if she would have made it. And this is my thing. Do you think?
But is it like a Kanye and Bao, like sort of? I mean, also kind of gone like a non-traditional bad girl.
Gone away, being well, she's been the bad girl. Gone away, reformed that image, come back, and even though she's still got the bad girl image, she's showing people out there that I can still be a bad girl, but still be this famous celebrity who can be a good girl and be very talented at it. So this is my thing. Do you feel that we don't have as much leeway in terms of creating a brand as an international artist might have?
Definitely. I mean, South Africa is still a conservative market. So I do believe that, you know, you can't get away with the same things, you know. I think that definitely puts like a lot of parameters on the directions that you can go. And I think it's definitely unfair in a sense that if you as an artist are having to kind of constrain who you are in order to fit within the market, I think that that's always going to be a difficult thing. But, you know, perceptions do change. You know, I think that
but
it's a matter of time.
But you made a comment before saying, you know, it's very hard to leave this industry and come back.
Right.
Who, in your opinion, do you think that has done that successfully?
I can name two.
Okay, go ahead.
One is KO. I think that his rebrand was incredible. He went from like Tear Gas, which was a semi-house like hip hop band that I don't want to diss them, but like, you know, a lot of people didn't really rate them because the music just wasn't considered like real. You know what I'm saying? And then he basically took a year off and then came back as like this, you know, like a hood legend. You know what I'm saying? Like the way that he rebranded himself from Tear Gas to like almost like a gangster rap type of vibe was like amazing. It was amazing. And how he extended like the life of his career. Like nobody would have thought that, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, that KO would be like the lyricist, you know, like, you know, it's crazy. So I think that he did a really, really good job of that. But at the same time, I think, anytime you depart from a group, you know,
you take a chance,
but at the same time, it's a whole new opportunity to, extend your career. And I think the Tear Gas was definitely on its outs. So when KO bounced, like it really allowed him to do, to create this whole new persona. And I think that you get a bit of a pass, you know, because, when you do that to create this whole new persona. And I think Delez did a great job as well. Like he was a guy that everybody had kind of counted out. And, for him to come back was pretty impressive. I mean, obviously he had the benefit of being like AKA's guy.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think that what he did was quite extraordinary. And I think that.
Like, do you think it's sustainable though? If you look at Leslie's image, it's very, I mean, again, Leslie was born, he was born in the States, you know, his family's from here, but he very much encompassed a lot of what international was into our local music industry.
Definitely.
I think he did that very well. Don't get me wrong. I think he did it well. My question is we're becoming, and I've noticed this in the last year, where we really are starting to love our local music
no doubt.
We really love our local culture. So people are really going in that direction where you'll see a lot more of a neck in local hip hop songs as well. And even though, you know, that people don't even understand what they're singing, they're busy singing along in the clubs because it's local. So my thing is, do you think that's a sustainable image for him?
I would say, am I allowed to curse on here?
Yes,
just
you
I can.
Are.
Okay, so just for example, like when Delez came through talking about, you know, popping pussy and like all the stuff that they talking about in U.S. hip hop, like anybody before that to think about saying that, people just would have been like, ah, you can't say that. This is South Africa.
Yes.
And Leslie's talking about all these things that like Chu Change is talking about, in a relatively conservative market. And it worked. And I think had anybody else done it, people would have just been like, what are they doing? But when he was doing it, people were like, yo, man, he actually is this guy. You know what I'm saying? So I think that, the emergence of like the Trap, the 2 Chainz, Juicy J, all of this kind of like really like, you know, the whole strip club culture, this whole, the twerking stuff. I think that he embraced that, more so than anybody else. And he managed to make it work in a conservative market. And in terms of, is it sustainable long term? Well, no, because I mean, musically trends change, you know? So at some point, and it's changing now. But this guy has proven to be somebody that is able to change, you know, as the markets change. So the things that he was doing, with that, Mandela money stuff, it's not going to, last, but at the same time, I think that he's going to adjust and recalibrate and come up with something new, you know?
Okay. Thanks so much for that, Jig. We're going to go to a break now. We'll be back. And hopefully if you have any questions, you can, tweet cliffcentral.com or FC Fortune, and then we'll read all your questions and hopefully we'll be able to answer them for you.
How to start your great with Kellogg's and the Kelman 20.
Don't procrastinate. Do what you want to do and do it now.
Be as good as you can, but they can't actually ignore you.
Run your own race and stop comparing yourself to other people.
On your own pace, your own race, your own lane.
Love yourself enough to work on yourself and be honest with yourself.
The main thing is action every single day. Small attainable goals that will get you in the right direction.
Hashtag start your great.
When you're a CIO in a growing corporate, there's no just taking care of yourself and that's that. When you're a CIO, people see IT as a cost rather than a strategic investment. But we know you knew that. We know that between the successes and failures, the courage to continue is what counts. We also know that food is on other people's plates because of your job. The courage to grow is business. We've got the advisors, products, and solutions that enable you to do so. MTN Business, a new world of business.
And we're back. So I'd like to hear some questions from you guys. So if you could tweet us on cliffcentral.com or FC Fortune, which is my handle, and we'll get to your questions. So I was speaking to Akia off air, and we wanted to go into how local artists in South Africa and just Africa generally, how are we different to international artists in terms of branding, but also what's your advice for an artist who's listening out there? You know, he's got a 9-to-5, he hasn't given up his 9-to-5 yet to pursue his dreams, but he wants to get it off the ground. So, I mean, we know there's a number of platforms that you can put your music on and that kind of thing. But in terms of branding, in terms of getting people to know you, so I know when we started off with Casper, I mean, you know, the ponytail was one of the big things we focused on because it made Casper different and that really built his brand. Even though people might not have been listening to the music, they knew who he was because it was this dude walking around with this long ponytail. And it's become synonymous in other people's songs even, so that's part of his brand.
True.
AKA as well, you know, one of the first things I said to him when we first took him on was, we need to control this arrogance. But we controlled it in a way which created exactly what you said at the beginning of this interview. So we need to look at that. What is the niche that every artist, because the thing is to stand out, even with Reason, the way Reason raps, his lyrics, that's what makes him stand out. That's his niche. But even Reason, when he came onto the scene, I remember when I first seen Reason perform. Reason was performing in shoes, a jeans, and a shirt.
Right.
You look at Reason perform now and he's changed his image.
For sure.
And he now has the rapper image. His music hasn't changed. His music has gotten better, but it hasn't changed in the sense that he hasn't changed who he is, but his image has changed.
Okay.
So how do you look at an artist in terms of branding, or what advice can you give to young artists out there who are sitting at their 9-to-5s thinking, I want to do this, but I need to stand out from the crowd?
One of the things is consistency. And that is, like, with your brand, you can't keep changing it. Okay. Like you can sustain a change maybe early in your career, once or twice, maybe like before you pop off. But I think that you need to find something that works and stick with it. And I want to go and use the example of Reason. And you know, 5 years we've been working together. So that's quite a bit of time. And within music, trends change so quickly every year, especially with how hip hop has just exploded within the last 3 years. It's crazy. So you have so many people coming in. So there's a lot of, pressure and it's more competitive. Mm-hmm. Every year is 10 times more competitive than the previous year. So with Reason, it's like, you know, we want to keep a consistent message. And, that is like, he's the rapper's rapper. You know, he's the lyricist. He's old school, but he's still putting out new music. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, I'd say is like, all right, so I just went on, I was in the States, I think in May. And during that time, Reason was recording a new album. And then when I came back, he was playing me all the music and there was a single that he wanted to release. And I heard it and I was just like, ah, man, you know, I'm thinking to myself, this isn't him. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And fans will be the first to notice when you're not authentic. You know what I'm saying? Exactly.
Yeah.
And you'll lose the true fans if they catch you jumping on a trend and not mm-hmm. being authentic. And I mean, it was just my opinion, was that the song wasn't true to his brand. I felt like it was too, let's do something that's popular right now. So it was a course over a couple of weeks. I sat down at all the people involved on the side and I was asking, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, how confident are you in this single? And the more, and everybody at the beginnings felt really confident. And the more I was questioning them, that 1 out of 10, it went from like an 8 to a 6 to a 4 to the point where by the end, I'd convinced everybody to reconsider the single. Mm-hmm. So then at that point, I went through the songs. The single he has out right now is Prescription. I wanted him to rewrite the verses in order to change the theme. And we went in, re-recorded it, and then released it. And now it's like heavy rotation everywhere, you know, like YFM everywhere it's playing and it's a hit. So I think that it's like, that's the way I look at it is consistency. And, if you're going to change your brand, that needs to be like the fire extinguisher that says break in case of emergency.
Yeah.
That's changing your brand.
Okay.
Is only break in case of emergency. Like, yo, you're down and out. It's not working. You're at the tail end of your career. Complete reassessment. Sit down with the team. What are we going to do?
Okay.
That's when you
but
change.
But do you think that happened with Questa? Because let's be honest, Questa's been around for a long time.
Sure.
And he's released music that has done okay.
Sure.
Then he released Now. And I mean, Questa has blown up. Like,
no doubt.
This dude has blown up. So what do you think he's changed from previously? Because when I listened to Questa and I listened to his lyrics before, he's still, the messaging is kind of still the same.
Sure.
So what do you think? I mean, the only difference is he looks a little bit more gangster now.
He does.
But that I don't think that has changed from his fans. Do you think it's because his fans have stuck with him, or do you think it's because he's gone gangster?
I think it's
because
he's gone more gangster. I think he's got all new fans. And I think that the way you look at it is from a trend in hip hop. So, if you look at the way hip hop and what hip hop was kind of portraying before, one of the things I noticed is like hip hop, when I first came to Joburg, hip hop was almost like the people that were making it. It was almost for like a privileged kids type thing. It was more like middle class, upper class. It was the kid, people that could afford to buy beats, the people that didn't have to work, you know, because they came from a little bit. I'm not saying they were rich, but they came from money where they could afford to spend 5 years working on music. So a lot of the stuff that was portrayed, I mean, now it's extremely glorified by like Les and AK, this high life. You know what I'm saying? But I think when I first got here, it was still kind of like that. You know, it was like Santa and Rosebank. Those are the things that these rappers were portraying.
Mm-hmm.
And then right around 2 years ago, it became like this Kazi thing, you know, where it was like more pride in like being from the hood. And I think that like Questa was one of the guys to really first jump on that. And you can see a very distinct break musically, you know, from where he was under when he was with Slicker and those guys. It was very like kind of bubblegum radio.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden when like the Kazi movement happened, he broke and went in that direction. That's the same as like Casper at the time, KO at the time. They all kind of went this direction. And that's the thing to remember is like, as much as people want to aspire to like Santa and Rosebank, more people live in the hood than live in those areas. So I think it was also as hip hop became bigger, because for a while, well, for almost pretty much all the time, house was bigger in the hood.
Yes.
Than hip hop was.
Time.
But now hip hop's bigger. And I think that like maybe, I don't know if Quest and them like had a conscious, you know, noticing of that in order to do the shift. But
so are you saying that branding needs to happen according to the trends that we have in music at the time?
Well, you know, the thing is like, who knows, man? Questa might have always been that guy, but
I think Questa was always that
guy. Yeah, but he was just doing something different.
But I think also he was a little bit more advanced for the audience that he has now. And also he has a platform for exposure. Hip hop has grown fundamentally, like it's just blown in the last 8 years.
No doubt.
And it's really, 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 really gotten to that point where we are phenomenally accepting of hip hop and the artists and the culture and the image that comes with it. But now are you saying that branding, that's what I'm saying, are you saying branding is according to what our trends are? Because now that we have these amazing hip hop artists, we're at that point now where we're accepting of them and we're buying the actual music.
For sure.
So are we telling our artists that we have to brand according to that?
I think that when I'm using Quest as an example, I think that that's, he made the shift about 2 years ago. I'm going to talk about the present, and that is like, yeah. I think that we can control these trends now as hip hop. And what I mean by that is, I hate to always kind of take it back to house versus hip hop,
yeah.
but I think that it's important. And to me, I think that like within our watch, and I mean our watch, like the people that have really contributed to hip hop a lot that are active now, we'll see hip hop, surpass house on a musical level, rotation level.
But like that's been happening recently.
It has, but we've already surpassed them in terms of cultural relevance.
Yes.
And that is because we're just cooler than the house guys. And this is no disrespect to the house guys. Great, talented, but our personalities are bigger. The things that we do, we know how, we're more individualistic. Like if you look at, let me use Black Coffee as an example. You know, like respected when, you look at the words that come to mind when you say Black Coffee, it's like talented, respected, you know, great music, but nobody's like cool. You know what I'm saying? Nobody's really paying attention to what Black Coffee is wearing. Nobody, you know, what shoes did Black Coffee have when he, you know, was hanging out? Nobody knows that type of stuff. He's not influencing culture. He's doing a great job musically. But if you look at like, Ricky Rick, everybody knows what he's wearing.
Oh, yes.
AKA, what Jordans does he have? Like, I'm waiting for the first guy to perform with Jordans on their hands just to be like, yo, I'm wearing two pairs of Jordans at the same time. You know, like just like ridiculous stuff like that. So to me, hip hop has already surpassed, house, culturally. And what that allows us to do is it gives us more freedom, to be able to distinguish, our own trends. You know what I'm saying? Well, 2-3 years ago, we didn't have that.
No, that's very true. Yeah. But now let's look at, let's look at a kid at like Nasty C. He's 19 years old, come into this industry. He has taken over. For me personally,
yeah.
When I first heard this kid like a year and a half ago, I had one song of his and I wasn't impressed.
Okay.
When he came out, and I mean, he must have been about 17 at the time. And when he came out and he was doing all this other music, I really took note of him.
Mm.
And just listening to him, I'm fearful for the people who are about to release things.
Sure.
Because he's about to drop his album and he's about to kill this industry. I can only imagine what he's about to do. But he's 19.
Okay.
What's his niche? He has no niche, but this, besides the fact that he's 19 and he has no other competitors at that age in our local industry in that genre. So do you think it's because he's an amazing rapper that he's doing well, or because he's 19 and doing well?
I think that it's a combination of both. One, he's an amazing rapper. When I first heard his mixtape, I was blown away. I was like, yo, this guy is incredible. And at the same time, it's because he's 19 and, you know, like from a, you work within like, with different, corporates and different products and stuff like that. And what's the most coveted demographic? 18 to 25.
The youth.
Yeah, that's what they want.
Money. They spend the most money. Money.
Exactly. So who, you know, for myself or for Reason, anybody else who's, you know, been in the industry for a while, we're getting older and it's as much as we stay connected to this demographic of 18 to 25,
yeah.
You can't understand it as much as somebody who is actually 18 to 25.
Okay, but
you know
we've got people like Hov that are like almost 50 and he's still killing it in the game.
Yeah, but in a different way, man. Hov, like I love Hov because Hov is like, all right, cool, man. He's suited up now. He's talking about grown folks stuff. You know, like that's my difference between him and Eminem.
But still the 18-year-old is still buying Hov music.
Yeah, I think, but that's also because, okay, I'll use the Jay-Z versus Eminem comparison.
Okay.
And I used to love Eminem.
I still love him.
Do you?
You know what? I honestly think Eminem is still one of the best rappers from my, I mean, guys, I'm 37.
Yeah.
So for when I was young, you know, Eminem for me, you know, I grew up with a lot of different hip hop music, but for Eminem for me, I really enjoyed his music because I enjoyed the lyrics. And it wasn't about the fact that he was white and rapping.
Mm.
It was about the fact that I actually enjoyed his lyrics.
I guess like for me, I also enjoy his lyrics, but from a content point of view, I don't really listen to Eminem anymore. And that is,
he's not releasing anything.
But he lost me. Like he's, 44 years old and still talking about fighting with his girlfriends and, you know,
he's still fighting with his girlfriends.
But that's my problem. But he's still, the content is still, a lot of the content is still the same as when he was 23. And for me, like, as I, like, that's why I like Jay-Z, is because as I've gotten older, he's also gotten older, yeah, and his content has changed. While Eminem, I just don't relate to. Like, cool, I respect the wordplay and the way that he does the lyricism, but I just don't vibe out to his stuff. And while Jay-Z is still, like, working with the newest producers, he's still on the Khaled, you know, latest song. You know, you can still catch him with J. Cole and stuff like that. So I think that, like, he's kind of on that Madonna tip as well. Like, maybe he's the rap Madonna, you know? But going back to, like, Nasty C, I think that we also have to look at the structures of hip-hop which have allowed for a Nasty C to exist.
Yes.
And that is three or four, like, okay, so Nasty C is the first guy. Like, there's two things that I'm really looking at closely within hip-hop right now. One is Nasty C, and one is, like, Toomey and Double HP Pro. And the reason I'm looking at that is because they're breaking new grounds in a sense that we've, with the older guys, we've never had. How does a rapper in South Africa age gracefully and still be relevant?
But you know, for me, the person that's done that so well has been Toomey Molekane.
You know, maybe. I don't know. Like, you know, Toomey, like, I got a, that's my dude. We got a close relationship. I mean, I respect him a lot, but he's not, you know, I don't know if he's getting booked. I don't know, like, how many singles he's selling. And I think it's the same thing in a sense that he's on that Black Coffee tip, in a sense that kids respect him, but they don't think he's cool. So I'm thinking, all right, so I'm watching closely. How are these rappers going to age gracefully and stay relevant as they get older?
But
I think Double HP is trying.
Nasty C, then you've got to look at that. How does he, that means he's going to have to, it's kind of the Justin Bieber syndrome. He's going to have to take his fans with him.
Definitely. Well, that's the thing with Nasty C, is we've never had a prodigy. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Everybody else, whether it's Casper, whether it's AKA, everybody has put in 3 to 5 years. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
On the come up. Nasty C, mixtape out, 17 years old, boom, he's out. So there's no prototype, you know, there's no blueprint for what Nasty C is doing, just like there's no blueprint for what Toomey and Double HP are doing, because nobody's done it before. So with Nasty C, it's going to be very interesting to see, is he going to burn out by 21, 22?
Yeah.
Because the average lifespan of a rapper is only 3 to 5 years, like, max, you know, it's so hard to stay hot. So is he going to burn out, or is he going to end up having a 12, 15 year career where he's relevant? It's really interesting to see. And I think that, the advantages he has now is that hip hop is so big and there's so much money going into him. Just the fact that Mbala Noise can exist blows my mind. I think it's great. Like, you know, I can't say that I understand their business model, but at the same time, the fact that you have a management or like a brand, a group, and that is putting so much money into it.
You don't really get artists or record labels these days that put money into artists like Mbala Noise has done. And as much as there's been noise around them and controversy, at the end of the day, I think their goal is still to make sure that our artists don't die hungry. Like, our artists are dying and they're living these glamorous lives while being famous, and then they die and leave nothing to their families. So I think, you know, I agree with them in that sense, that they're trying to create longevity and also sustainability for these people's families.
For sure.
And it's not just about, you know, the career. So what I want, you know, we don't have a lot of time left, but okay, I just want to go through, name me 3 brand fails for artists that are listening out there now, that, you know, this is maybe not what you're supposed to do, or what would probably work for you.
I don't know.
I think one of the things is be, you know, social media is there's so many laws around social media,
okay,
and what you can and can't say, and what you should and shouldn't be saying. So I think as a new artist, you got to be very careful of the toes that you step on the way up, because you could basically be shutting the door on your career forever.
Okay. Let me think. The one that comes to mind quickly, I think, is, okay, so like starting beef, is very controversial because it can do a lot for your career.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? So I think one thing, if you look at, and I'll use 2 examples. One was, the Common and Drake beef. And then if you look at even like the Meek Mill, Drake beef, I'll tell you why those are brand fails. Like, for me, like, Common has pretty much disappeared, and everybody thought, oh, yo, it's Common. He's
Common's still hot though. Damn.
Yeah. But even now, yeah, he's an actor now. You know what I'm saying? But like, the thing with that is when he decided to take on Drake, the one thing that I learned from it was, it's the way that hip hop, it's a failure to understand where hip hop is now. And that is, the market doesn't actually care about necessarily who the better rapper is. Mm-hmm. To a certain extent, it's who's more popular. And like, with the Meek Mill Drake beef, it was Meek Mill miscalculated how important it is that people write their own raps.
Mm-hmm.
He was thinking from the school of old, like, yo, if this was the 90s.
Yeah, he was thinking of authenticity you know, to be a real rap. Because, I mean, if you know, we know Jay walks into a studio, he doesn't like write lyrics, he raps off the top of his head. So we want that, you know, we want that credibility from a rapper. So I think he also went in there but thinking the he was going to win this argument.
Yeah, like,
and
if it was the 90s.
Drake is the Beyonce of rap. Like, let's not be honest. No, you, if you go after Drake, his followers are coming for you.
I mean, he's also very talented, but I think that Meek was thinking, this is the 90s. Like, in the 90s, if people found out you didn't write your raps, it would have ended your career.
Yeah.
Now the general public doesn't actually care. So for me, that was kind of a brand fail. Like, it was miscalculating what your advantages were.
So do you think there's no place for conscious rap anymore?
There is, in the US, not necessarily here. I think that it can change. I think also, like, if you know, making it localized, if you look at, like, kind of Toomey and Ricky Rick were kind of having an exchange of words on different songs. And Toomey's like a battle rapper. I mean, that's one of the ways he's rebranded himself, is like, that guy's going overseas. He's participating in the,
he's done work with Chinese Man.
Yeah, you know.
So it's been huge.
So he's doing stuff. Like, he's a battle rapper. And again, 3 years ago, nobody would have started a beef lyrically with Toomey, and now Ricky Rick is kind of chirping at him. But it goes back to the fact that Ricky, I think, understands that he's more popular than Toomey. So in that sense, he can win just based on popularity. You know what I'm saying? So I think that's a brand win. But when we're going back to brand fails, is like, starting beefs, creating all this hype around you and losing. And I think that, like, Common and Meek Mill would, you know, be examples of, like, brand fails where they miscalculated that what they were doing. And in the end, both of their brands diminished. Like, Meek Mill now, it's like, he's almost a joke, you know, like, and I feel bad for the guy.
And he's not come out with anything since that beef. Yeah, like, he's disappeared. He's Nicki's boyfriend.
He's Nicki, yo. And that's a brand. He started a beef. Now, like, career, you know, no one takes him seriously. So I think those are, like, examples of brand fails.
Okay. And anything else you want to give some artists some advice out there before we head off?
I was at CNA the other day, and one of the guys, cashiers, recognized me. And then he was like, he calls his friend over, and there's another cashier, and they're like, yo, and there's a line behind us, and they're like, yo, can you give us some advice? Just one piece of advice for people trying to make it in the industry. And I'm like, man, there's nothing I can tell you in this 30 seconds that's really going to help you. So, I mean, there's a lot of different things. Like, if you're trying to make it, if we're talking strictly about brands, you know, I would say consistency and authenticity.
You have a niche.
Yeah, definitely. Like, what's going to set yourself apart? Like, I think, like, if you look at someone who really kind of branded themselves in a very different way, like, I think Ifani is quite interesting to see. Like, that dude was so different and quirky. And
and it wasn't even because he had the best lyrics, but his videos were so out of the ordinary that you would know it was him, because his creativity was completely different to everyone else's at the time when he came out.
Definitely.
I just don't think, you know, I love him. I just don't think his consistency wasn't there.
Well, I mean, you know, some people... I mean, I like the dude, man. But you know, you can say that maybe his image was almost a bit of a gimmick, and you know, gimmicks are kind of difficult to maintain for a long amount of time. So I think the main, you know, there's a degree of authenticity, because like I was saying earlier, it's like you can't, you can fake something on a small level, but the bigger you get, the harder it is to fake it, you know? So I'd say authenticity.
Okay, so we're going to wrap it up. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
We really, really appreciate that you came in.
No worries.
And now we're going to go off to a insert from Renette, and she'll be giving you some advice regarding branding. Thank you.
Dope.
Hello, and thank you so much for joining me, Renette Leibovitz. I'm from SafetyNet Cyber Safety, an organization that focuses on creating awareness for responsible digital engagement. And we love the cyber highway. It's just about how do we ensure that we are safe and friendly drivers on this highway, and how do we enjoy the benefits of it. So this week I'm not in studio because I'm actually attending really interesting training. I've been chosen, and I'm so fortunate to be one of the people who are receiving the Wolfpack Cyber Academy training all about cybersecurity. And this is offered by Wolfpack Information Risk, and they specialize in cybersecurity. So what are we learning? I mean, this is like a couple of weeks that we are going to get together for some days in those weeks where we talk about not just the reasons why it's important to look at cybersecurity, but also how it works. And you know what's really fascinating is that I'm actually joined by people from government, and you have to ask, what is your government doing to protect you and the country and your data, your information, the citizens, the personal information? How do we keep our borders safe? How do we ensure that in cyberspace that we are covered? And things like, you know, the approach and how do you actually do an assessment to check, do a health check phase, as they call it. Then you look at the improvement. How do you do remediation, and how do you improve your systems to make sure that you're safe? And then how do you monitor the threat monitoring phase? And you know what? I recently watched a movie called Black Hat, and you only need to watch that to understand why this is so prevalent and why this is so important to understand. So I want to thank Wolfpack for letting me come on board and to experience this amazing training and giving me the knowledge that I can share with you again. Another thing that I'm excited about is the Digital Education Show Africa happening 18 to 19 October at the SANA Convention Center in Johannesburg. Now, this is purely focused on the education market. However, as parents, as young entrepreneurs, as people who are looking for opportunities, this could be the place to go and find those opportunities. They've got numerous people exhibiting and over 30 free educational seminars, everything from looking at the classroom at the future or of the future, mobility management, why schools need cyber savvy teachers. That's what I'm going to be speaking about, because this is so important for teachers to understand the laws, how to deal with situations. Like, what do they do when there's a child or a learner in their class with pornography on his or her phone? Do they actually know what the law says, and do they actually know what to do? So those type of things will be discussed. Another topic is using games and software simulation in e-learning. And I mean, wouldn't we all love to learn through and via games? So there's a lot that you can check out. You can go to Terrapin's website. It's Terrapinn, or just search for the Digital Education Show Africa. So I invite you to look at the Wolfpack online. I invite you to look at the Digital Education Show Africa. And then, of course, I invite you to be safe on the cyber highway. Have fun and join our conversations at SafetyNet. It's SAVETNet, because we save lives by creating awareness for responsible digital engagement. Till next time, thanks so much and all the best.
This is CliffCentral.com.